the CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Holiday business gifting season is fast approaching. This year, choose gifts that are simple to give and a joy to get. Choose Omaha Steaks. There's a huge variety, from premium steaks to skillet meals. There's free shipping on most packages, and all gifts are 100% guaranteed. Be confident in your gift choice. You can never start too early. Contact Omaha Steaks today. Enjoy special holiday pricing on the perfect business gift. It's an ideal holiday gift for your clients, employees, or partners. The perfect business gift includes 4 bacon-wrapped tri-tip steaks, 4 Omaha Steak Burgers, 4 gourmet Franks, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 kielbasa sausages, 4 free caramel apple tartlets, plus you'll get free shipping. This exclusive holiday gift package is only $59.99. Go to omahasteaks.com, type nation in the search bar, and choose the perfect business gift. Again, visit omahasteaks.com and enter code nation in the search bar to send or experience this exclusive gift package for only $59.99. And it ships free.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. President Trump decertifies the Iran nuclear deal.
We cannot and will not make this certification.
What it means and the world coming to its defense.
We think it's a genuinely effective deal.
Later, health officials report an outbreak of the plague in Madagascar.
It's in people's lungs and therefore it's easier to spread.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. We're starting this weekend with the Iranian nuclear deal struck by the Obama administration and leaders of other world powers and 2015, President Trump has decided to deem Iran as not in compliance with the deal to curb its nuclear program.
I am directing my administration to work closely with Congress and our allies to address the deal's many serious flaws so that the Iranian regime can never threaten the world with nuclear weapons.
More from White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy.
The president's decision triggers a 60-day period in which Congress can pass a new sanctions bill on an expedited basis. That would kill the deal and potentially result in Iran once again enriching uranium. So the president's not asking for that. Instead, he's pushing lawmakers to pass a new law which holds out the threat of sanctions if Iran should skirt the agreement an inch closer to nuclear capability.
Sir Kim Derrick is the UK's ambassador to the U.S. Thanks for talking with us, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's start with the Iran deal. Does the UK believe Iran is in compliance with the deal it worked with the US and other world powers on?
Yes, we do. We listened to the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Authority. They've conducted something like 400 site visits since the deal came into force, 25 snap inspections. They believe that Iran is in compliance with the detail of this agreement, and so do we.
Is it effective?
Yes, it's highly effective. I mean, the deal pushed back the Iranian program substantially. It cut their number of centrifuges for enriching uranium by 2/3. It stripped out 95% of the enriched uranium stockpile. So they used to have 12 tons of it, including some 20% enriched material. Cut all that back. There's a 300-kilogram limit now on the enriched uranium stockpile there. And it sets up the most intensive inspection regime, most rigorous monitoring regime in history, up to 25 years, some elements of it. So we think it's a genuinely effective deal.
Okay, I'd like to talk about Brexit now. The EU's chief negotiator says progress on talks with the UK have apparently stalled. What's going on?
I think they've just finished the fifth round of talks. And as I understand it, they have made significant progress on some of the issues, notably on the rights of European citizens in the UK and the rights of British citizens living in mainland Europe. They also made progress on our target of maintaining, so far as possible, the common travel area between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. But look, these are difficult, complicated negotiations. They were never going to be settled in a few weeks. There are more issues that we need to tackle and sort out, but we're confident as we go forward that we can resolve these remaining issues.
What are some of the trade issues between the UK and the EU that are most pressing?
Well, single market is one of the most important and most successful features of the European Union. And we are historically strong supporters of open markets and free trade. So at some stage soon, we want these negotiations to move on to, once we leave the EU, to having the most comprehensive possible free trade agreement between the UK and the remaining states of the European Union. That is central to our objectives for Britain's future relationship once we have left the European Union with our European partners.
You mentioned the UK is a strong supporter of free trade. As you know, the US is renegotiating NAFTA with Mexico and Canada. What do you think the prospects are the UK might actually join that agreement? Have there been any discussions of that?
No. I mean, our position is that our focus will be on negotiating a free trade deal with the European Union. We're also keen in future to get, once we have left the European Union, a free trade deal with the United States. The United States is our most important bilateral trading partner. More than 20% of our British exports come to the US. We're also each other's very important investment partners. Something like a million Brits go to work in the UK in American companies. Another million Americans go to work in British companies every day. And I think that US exports to the UK support some 700,000 jobs here in America. So our focus, I say, will be on a free trade deal with the European Union after we've left the EU, and a free trade deal between the UK and the US. Those will be our main priorities.
Are you discussing any plans with the US for a trip to the UK by President Trump?
President Trump is invited to the UK for a state visit. That invitation was extended when the Prime Minister was over here at the beginning of this year. And the invitation stands, and we look forward to seeing the President in the UK. He's welcome whenever he wants to come, but on the state visit, you know, when they're ready to come, we look forward to that happening.
Do you imagine there would be many protests in the UK that would coincide with that trip?
Oh, I wouldn't like to predict that, but let me be clear. President would be a welcome and honoured visitor to the UK whenever he wants to come.
British Ambassador Sir Kim Derrick, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, President Trump has decided to end federal subsidies to health insurers under Obamacare, a move that could upend insurance marketplaces. Out west, authorities are recovering bodies from devastating wildfires tearing through California's wine country.
These are now the deadliest wildfires in California history. Sonoma County Sheriff Rob Giordano says some of the discoveries have been gruesome.
Some of these remains are actually intact bodies. Some of them are merely ashes and bones.
Search and rescue crews have started to use cadaver dogs as they comb through the remains of destroyed homes. The searches are far from over. It's very likely the death toll will rise. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Santa Rosa, California.
President Trump is taking a softer tone with hard-hit Puerto Rico after it was devastated by recent storms. On Friday, Mr. Trump promised to, quote, always be with them 24 hours after insisting that the federal government can't keep sending help forever. Much of the island remains without power weeks after Hurricane Maria. Correspondent David Begno is on the ground in Puerto Rico.
All we hear is that things are going the best that they can, given the circumstances. The governor is pleased with what the federal government is doing. The president is commending the people who are here on the ground, but the people who live here are not pleased.
Still to come, the plague in Madagascar.
The fleas that live off the rats will jump off the rats and bite people, and that's how it spreads.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The Trump administration is hailing the release of a family long held by a group with ties to the Taliban. More from CBS News correspondent Bill Rakoff in Washington.
American Caitlin Coleman and her Canadian husband Joshua Boyle were kidnapped in Afghanistan in 2012 by a group aligned with the Taliban. The State Department's Heather Nauert says the U.S. is grateful for the assistance of Pakistan in the release of the couple and their three children.
We are tremendously happy to have these folks returning.
Nauert says the family's release is part of the president's priority to bring captive Americans home.
You saw the president do that with the return of Aya Hejazi from Egypt back in April, I believe it was. We saw that happen with Otto Warmbier.
Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
A British ISIS jihadist has reportedly been killed in a U.S. drone strike in Syria. Her name, Sally Ann Jones, also known as the White Widow. More from the BBC security correspondent Frank Gardner.
Despite posing in photographs cradling a Kalashnikov assault rifle, Sally Ann Jones is unlikely to have played any kind of a combat role. But U.S. and British intelligence agencies considered her dangerous enough to put her on a wanted list, and they'd been tracking her for some time. The Defense Secretary, Sir Michael Fallon, responded to reports of her death with this warning to would-be jihadists.
If you have chosen to fight for Daesh, then you've made yourself a legitimate target, and you run the risk every hour of every day of being on the wrong end of an RAF or a United States missile.
Ms. Jones' husband, Junaid Hussein, a skilled computer hacker, had already been killed in a drone strike 2 years ago, but the fate of her 12-year-old son, Jojo, is unclear. His grandparents identified him taking part in an earlier IS execution video, but U.S. officials have reportedly said that as a minor, he could not be deliberately targeted.
The BBC's Frank Gardner reporting. U.S.-backed forces are cornering ISIS in its one-time stronghold of Raqqa in Syria. CBS News correspondent Holly Williams is there in the largely lifeless city.
This is the shattered heart of Raqqa, laid waste by 3 years of ISIS rule and a siege that's lasted 4 months. On the front line, these US-backed Syrian militiamen decided to put on a show for our camera. ISIS gunmen are hiding in the ruins of a nearby apartment building, they said, but it looked more like boredom than real fighting. Progress here is grindingly slow. They know exactly where ISIS is in a tiny sector of the city, but they can't flush them out. Around 250 fighters are thought to be dug in, some of them in this stadium, others around Naeem Square, which ISIS once decorated with severed heads. But amongst the fighters are civilians being used as human shields. They have women and children with them, Commander Zaim Ahmadi told us. He used to be an electrician in Raqqa and claims to have killed dozens of ISIS extremists. He took us to see a long dead corpse. The only signs of life in most neighbourhoods, apart from the fighters, are stray cats. They're trying to stay alive, like everyone else in this beleaguered city.
US-backed forces continue to say that they are just days away from victory in Raqqa, but they've already opened up a new front further to the south, where ISIS is being squeezed into a shrinking area in the desert. So the fighting will continue. Holly Williams, CBS News, in northern Syria.
Madagascar is dealing with an outbreak of the plague. The World Health Organization's Nika Alexander is there and joins us by phone. Nika, what's going on?
Well, nobody wants to think their country's having an outbreak of plague. Madagascar is one of the few countries in the world where it's endemic, and so they're used to having plague. The difference this year, though, and the reason you're talking about it, the reason we're talking about it, is the outbreak started earlier than their normal plague season, as it were. There's already more cases than they would normally have. They normally have about 400 in the several months where they have plague, and this year it's already past 400 at this point. And also, there's two forms of plague, and the one that's dominating this year is a pneumonic plague. So it's in people's lungs, and therefore it's easier to spread. If somebody's lungs are infected and they cough and sneeze, it's easier for it to spread than bubonic plague, which affects another part of the body. So that's what's going on. That's what the concern is anyways.
Why is there plague in Madagascar?
You know, it's a complicated story. There's a lot of history to do with, the history, the environment, with the level of development. But I guess the simplest answer is there are the rats in this country carry the bacteria. And there's a time of year when the rats are more likely to come in closer contact with people. And the fleas that live off the rats will jump off the rats, bite people, and that's how it spreads.
What are health officials on the ground in Madagascar doing to help communities cope and combat this disease?
So because they're used to it, in a way, they know what to do for bubonic plague, which is, doesn't spread as easily. But this year, they were taken a bit by surprise with the fact that it was pneumonic plague, which passes from person to person more easily. So they have to help people be more aware of that. They have to make sure medication is more widely available, because this year it's also in areas that don't normally see plague. One of the things international partners are doing is making sure those supplies are in country, that the medicines to treat the patients, that the materials for healthcare workers to protect themselves are there. Do you know one thing I should have mentioned off the top is, even though plague is a really awful disease, it's very treatable with antibiotics, not something even terribly exotic. A patient will have antibiotics given intravenously and has a really good chance of survival. But the important thing is that they get to the healthcare center early, as soon as they have the first signs. And that's one of the key messages the government's trying to ensure people hear, that it's treatable, that it's not a death sentence. Come in, get treated by the doctors. Don't treat yourself, because you won't know how much and where and what kind of antibiotic to use, but come in and get treated. And the international partners are making sure there's teams helping to spread that message, working with the government and obviously local people to spread the message, and making sure the materials are available, and also helping them analyze the outbreak and seeing where is it going, what kind of traditions or rituals do we need to change, do we need to change the way it's treated in your hospitals, and so on. So helping to bring that technical expertise as well.
Are those materials, are those medicines available right now to doctors in Madagascar?
They are and they aren't. So they are in the sense that the right quantities are available. In fact, we had a ceremony where we handed over the latest shipment from WHO to the country, to the president. But those still need to be distributed across the country, and it's not easy to get to every part of this country. It's not there aren't roads necessarily everywhere where you need them to be. So what we would say is the elements are here, but we need to make sure that they get where they need to be.
The WHO's Nika Alexander in Madagascar. Be safe, Nika.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Up next, more Harvey Weinstein accusers speak out.
He tried to coerce me to take my top off.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job, better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The man accused of deserting his army unit in Afghanistan before being captured by the Taliban and held for 5 years is expected to plead guilty to charges Monday.
The army says Bo Bergdahl will enter a plea Monday morning. Reports last week said that he plans to plead guilty to desertion and misbehavior rather than face trial. If he does, the question becomes whether or not he goes to prison or receives a lesser sentence because he was held by the Taliban for so long. Bergdahl says he left his unit because of poor leadership and was trying to find a superior officer at another post when he was captured. 6 soldiers were killed, several seriously hurt, as the army looked for him. The Taliban returned him to the U.S. in exchange for 5 prisoners in 2014. Peter King, CBS News.
More women are coming forward claiming powerful Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein sexually harassed them.
He was in a bathtub. He tried to coerce me to take my top off.
Tommy Ann Roberts says she quit acting after being sexually harassed by Harvey Weinstein in 1984.
Whose phone number do you dial at the Weinstein Company to say this happened to me? And who on the other end would believe me?
Erica Rosenbaum told the CBC nearly 15 years ago, Weinstein grabbed her by the neck while he pleasured himself after he talked me into the bathroom at a Toronto hotel. I was afraid of him. Kate Beckinsale said when she was 17, he opened the door in his bathrobe. A few years later, he asked me if he had tried anything with me. I realized he couldn't remember if he had assaulted me or not.
It's the entitlement of too many men, and it is epidemic.
And when they're famous and powerful like Harvey, then it gets talked about.
Jane Fonda says she regrets not speaking up sooner after Rosanna Arquette revealed to her an inappropriate encounter with Weinstein. In a 2014 interview, Howard Stern asked Weinstein about using his power to get close to actresses.
Did you ever get to experience the, I'm going to say, the mogul aspect? You never got any of that?
Howard, as you know only too well, it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't really?
No, I'll tell you who it works that way for. It works that way for the actors.
Don't tell me it doesn't work
Howard,
that way.
Howard, I wish the movies are too expensive, the risks are too great.
CBS News correspondent Jerika Duncan reporting. New research from Save the Children and the World Bank says 20,000 girls are married illegally every day. Carolyn Miles heads up Save the Children. Carolyn joins us in studio this weekend. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
How many girls are married illegally each year, and how young are they?
Well, there are about 7.5 million girls that are married illegally every single year, so that's about 20,000 a day. And there are 100 million girls around the world that are not protected by laws, or they're laws that are easy to get around, that don't prevent girls from being married under the age of 18. So we're really talking about girls under the age of 18 when we talk about early marriage.
Carolyn, how many girls in total are at risk, and what parts of the world is this the most common?
So 100 million girls are at risk of early marriage, and it's most common in two regions of the world, West Africa and the Middle East. And those are areas of the world also with not only a lack of laws, but also the local customs often condone or even encourage girls to be married at a very young age. So this isn't just about changing the legal structures, although that's really important, but it's also about changing beliefs and customs. And it's really about valuing girls. That's really at the heart of what this is about.
But don't these cultures, don't these traditions value girls?
You know, not when it comes to things like early marriage. I mean, early marriage is not valuing a girl. What happens for most girls when they're married, and we're talking about 13, 14-year-old girls often, they will stop going to school, so their education will end. They will probably within a year have a child themselves. So these are children having children. That mother, that child mother is more likely to die in childbirth. Her baby is more likely to die before the age of 5 or to be malnourished. And the cycle of poverty starts again. So this is not in the best interest of girls. And it really is about making sure that families value girls. They value education of girls. They see the opportunities for girls when they stay in school. And there isn't a difference between boys getting married early and girls getting married early. And that's why we talk about this as a value proposition for girls.
You mentioned changing legal structures, changing traditions. Some of this is done informally, right? Not recognized necessarily by the law. Is that part of the challenge?
That's right. As I said, there are about 100 million girls that are at risk of early marriage. And that's both because there aren't laws in their countries, but also because there are exceptions. So in many countries, the law can be skirted if the parents say that this is something that we're condoning, or even a judge sometimes will be able to overrule the law, or sometimes even a tribal leader, a local leader would be able to do that. So we don't think that that's right for girls. It's not in girls' best interest. So not only do we need laws, we need them to be enforced. We need fewer exceptions to those laws. And then, as I said, it really is about also changing people's beliefs and helping families and local community leaders and governments see the value of girls and the value of, again, keeping girls in school, which is has a big impact here when girls get married early.
Carolyn, you've also led some other new research on gender equality in Africa and here in the U.S.
We did really interesting research. So we looked at two countries in West Africa. Côte d'Ivoire was one of them, and Sierra Leone was the other. And we talked to fourth graders. So we wanted to talk to kids themselves, because these issues and this inequality between girls and boys really starts early. And we found some really interesting things in the research. So two out of three fourth-grade boys in Africa, in those two countries, for example, believed that boys are smarter than girls. So that's about 66% believed this was boys, believed that boys were smarter than girls. Really surprisingly, we asked the same question in the United States, and the percentage was still 40% of boys in the U.S., fourth graders that were asked this, believed that boys were smarter than girls. So that was a very surprising finding to me. I would have expected even not that high of as the percentage that we saw in West Africa, but I would have expected a higher percentage. I would have expected a much lower percentage in the U.S., where we talk a lot more about these issues. But it shows, I think, the early age at which these issues happen. And given everything that's in the news these days about women and the treatment of women, we really have to start earlier with our girls in terms of making sure that girls and boys see the equal value of each other.
Carolyn Miles from Save the Children in studio on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Carolyn.
Thanks, Steve.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, how food makers may be fooling you at the grocery store.
If you only read the front of the package claim, you often fall into the trap of thinking a food is healthier than it actually is.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. There's new concerns about the risk of exploding sunroofs.
Really loud, like, explosion sound.
Last year, Laura Leshneski told us how her sunroof shattered while she was driving down the highway with her three kids.
It sounded like there was a bomb inside my car that had gone off.
A new Consumer Reports investigation finds the problem is more common than first thought. The National Highway Transportation Safety Administration has received at least 859 complaints of shattered sunroofs since 1995.
Thankfully, there have only been minor injuries so far.
David Friedman, who works for a division of Consumer Reports, says most of the complaints have come in the past few years.
This is a problem that exists across many automakers, across many models. They're really expensive to fix, and car companies in many cases are refusing to step up and cover the cost for their consumers.
The chance of a sunroof exploding is still relatively low, but experts say the problem has increased as sunroofs have grown in size.
Consumer Reports found many complaints involve panoramic sunroofs, which cover the entire roof. Plus, sunroofs are often made with tempered glass, not laminated glass.
The glass that's used in these big sunroofs, it's not what's used in your windshield, where if a rock hits it, it cracks, but it doesn't shatter.
Hyundai leads the list of vehicles with complaints. Several cars have been recalled, including one Hyundai, to fix shattering issues. But experts believe more needs to be done to make sure vehicles are safe. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, New York.
Buyer beware, at least when you're considering which foods to pick up at the grocery store. Consumer Reports has a new guide on food packaging. Amy Keating is test program leader on product usability and food. She's also a registered dietitian. Thanks for talking with us, Amy.
Oh, you're welcome.
So what trends are you seeing on food packaging that may confuse consumers?
Well, what we're finding is that if you only read the front of the package claim, you often fall into the trap of thinking a food is healthier than it actually is. Even when some of these claims are approved by the FDA. For example, you might see a single nutrient content claim on the front of a package. Stelladora breakfast treats, for example, say good source of calcium. And while in fact this is true and the product does supply the minimum amount that the FDA requires, these cookies are far from a health food. They're still a cookie and they still have added sugars and no fiber or whole grains. So you really need to turn over that package and take a look at the ingredients and some key nutrients on the nutrition facts panel.
So besides claims, what are some buzzwords that could give you a clue into whether a product is trying to advertise itself as being healthy but not necessarily transparent?
It might be right in the product name. You might find product names that sound healthy, such as Skinny Pop, for example. That certainly sounds like a healthier choice than maybe some other popular popcorn brands, but in fact, Skinny Pop has slightly more calories and fat than other popular brands out there like Angie's and Indiana Popcorn. You might find made with claims. Brock's Candy Corn, for example, says made with real honey, And again, while the claim is true, you know, you might fall into the trap that the manufacturer has set up to think that this candy corn is more healthy than another, when in fact it has four other added sugars on the ingredient listing.
What about natural or simple?
Natural or simple are terms that are not defined, and really, with natural not being verified, it's a real slippery slope as to a manufacturer can just use that if they think their product is natural or simple. Cozy Shack has recently put simple right in a product name, Cozy Shack Simply Well Chocolate Pudding. But I'm not sure when you review the ingredients if you'd think they were simple or wholesome.
Is there anything you can spot on the front of the label, perhaps made with 100% whole grains, that might give you a clue into how healthy a product is for you?
If you see made with 100% whole grains, for sure that's an indication that the product has no refined grains. Any claims that actually list the nutrient content would be factual and match up with the back of the package. But otherwise, it really behooves you to flip it over and just take a look at scan the ingredient listing.
These foods that pop out some highlights of their nutrition, for instance, how much protein is in them, or how little sugar is in them, do they often hide something else?
They certainly can, especially sodium in a lot of cases. You might see a product that says it's low fat, and then you flip it over and you'll see a lot of sodium. So you really can't, you know, rely on a single nutrient. You really have to look at the whole picture. And when you flip it over and you're looking at that nutrition fact, pay attention to crucial things like sodium, sugar, and the type of fat.
Consumer Reports test program leader on product usability and food, Amy Keating. Thanks for being on the Weekend Roundup, Amy.
Thank you very much.
China's on the frontier of living life cashless, as correspondent Ben Tracy found out in Beijing.
When you pay for something, how do you pay for it?
Mobile phone.
On the streets of Beijing, cash is definitely not king.
What do you think of people who use cash to pay for things?
That's rare and weird, he says. Only the elderly and people who don't know how to use a phone pay cash. This woman says, I rarely take my wallet when I go out, just my phone. That's because those phones can buy just about anything, from clothes in the store to steamed buns on the street. They're used to pay for bike rides and bus rides, rent and utility bills.
When was the last time you used cash? A month ago?
WeChat and Alipay dominate China's mobile market, and payments on their platforms totaled more than $5.5 trillion last year, a 200% jump from the year before, and nearly 50 times more than the value of mobile payments in the U.S.
One of the big reasons mobile payments have caught on so quickly here in China is because of what most people here don't have in their wallets, credit cards. They basically went from a cash-based society to a cashless one and skipped the step in between.
China has leapfrogged the U.S. into going to a cashless society.
Andy Mock is an economist in Beijing. He says China's cashless revolution has happened in just 3 years. Largely thanks to QR codes. You simply scan them with your phone to pay. Nearly every business and person has one. From the farmer's market to the musician on the street playing for a mobile tip.
You can give a homeless person money with your phone. You would never see that in the U.S.
All you have to do is scan that code to transfer money. And it really is ubiquitous in China, from the largest cities, the fanciest hotels, to the most humble street-side shacks will all use QR codes.
The Chinese are comfortable doing everything on their phones, while in the U.S., credit cards and online shopping via personal computers still rule.
These kinds of legacy technologies make any adoption of newer generations of technologies much more slower. So in this sense, I think the U.S. has a little bit of catching up to do.
Coming up, the boss takes over Broadway on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Check out CBS News Radio podcasts. From hard news to features, there's lots available from our app. Listen to experts like John Dickerson each Sunday on Face the Nation or Anthony Mason every weeknight on the CBS Evening News. There's the World News Roundup, America's longest-running network newscast, and the Weekend Roundup, our Week in Review magazine show. It's all available from CBSNewsRadio.com or on our app for iOS and Android.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. There's new hope for folks who've lost their sight due to genetics.
It's the most horrifying feeling, just seeing everything fade away over time.
Most of 17-year-old Christian Guardino's life has been a blur. When he was born with LCA, a genetic mutation that leads to a life of blindness, his mother Beth felt hopeless.
He was my firstborn, so sorry. It was devastating. We were alone. We were completely alone in this.
Until 4 years ago, when Beth found Dr. Jean Bennett and her husband, Dr. Albert McGuire. They've been dedicated to reversing hereditary blindness for 2 decades. They say this new treatment could be a turning point.
We took the normal copy of that gene and delivered it to the cells that were defective.
After providing treatment, researchers tested their 41 patients' visual ability with an obstacle course. Christian nailed it.
He could navigate the obstacle course using dimmer light levels than he had ever been able to do it, and he was able to do that both accurately and quickly.
Patients have reported being able to lead more fulfilling lives. For Christian, who has loved to sing since he was a little boy, that meant performing on America's Got Talent.
I walked out on that stage all by myself. All those judges, I saw them, and I saw them, I saw their reactions.
Errol Barnett, CBS News, Silver Spring, Maryland.
The Boss on Broadway.
Screwing door slams.
Bruce Springsteen opened on Broadway, opining to the audience on being 68.
It is the one thing I miss about getting older. The beauty of that blank page. Of a thousand possibilities.
Springsteen using a teleprompter, wife Patti Scalfa duetting on 2 songs. The Boss paying tribute to his late sax player, Clarence Clemons. The show, already a critical success, Rolling Stone's headline, an intimate triumph. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News, New York.
After 18 months of renovation, the Smithsonian is reopening its Freer Gallery of Art on the National Mall this weekend. The Freer opened as the Smithsonian's first art museum. Curator Lee Glazer says the renovation worked to restore the museum to its 1923 allure and added a few 21st century features.
The other big difference that visitors will notice is the introduction of 21st century digital technology. This has never played a role in the visitor experience of the Freer, but when we reopen, we will have an audio tour of all of the highlights in the museum available in multiple languages. And then we're also launching a podcast series looking at Pan-Asian themes that resonate with objects on views.
48 Hours correspondent Peter Van Sant examines a bizarre case this weekend in Operation Murder. It's the story of a decorated former U.S. Army soldier who pretended to take on a hit job for 2 Houston-area doctors. He speaks out for the first time ever with Peter. Peter, first, tell us about this case.
Well, this is one of the most bizarre stories that I've worked on at 48 Hours. I kind of fell out of my chair when I heard about it, and my shock and amazement continued throughout the shoot. These two doctors... One's a veterinarian that runs the largest clinic of its kind in Houston. The other a surgeon. They both have ex-relationships. Valerie McDaniel, the veterinarian, is divorced from her husband, Mac. And Dr. Leon Jacob, a surgeon, has broken up with his girlfriend. And through a series of troubles and fights over money and resentment and things, both end up deciding, allegedly, to hire a hitman to kill him.
This alleged hitman is Taz Azay, right?
Right. Taz Azay is a former member of the U.S. military. He was in the Army. He was wounded over in Iraq by an IED exploding. And he was brought into this by a woman who knew Dr. Leon Jacob, the surgeon. And it wasn't a very nice situation in that Taz, because he was a military veteran and because his family is from the Middle East, this person who tried to arrange this thought, well, he'd be the perfect guy. He's from the Middle East, and he's an army guy, so he'll kill people. And that's how he got brought in. But Taz wanted to protect, because he heard that this woman named Megan Varikas, who was Dr. Leon Jacobs' girlfriend, was to be killed. He actually stepped into this to get more information about all of this and then eventually work with Houston and police.
So what did he end up telling you?
Taz is a, because, you know, there initially there was some question about, was he really going to go through with this? Because some money did change hands. The amount ranges, depending on who you talk to, from $2,500, $3,000, as much as $9,000 was paid to Taz Azay from Leon Jacob to kill his ex-girlfriend, allegedly. Keep in mind, everyone in this denies, right? And Dr. Jacob is going to be going on trial soon for all of this. But what Taz told us was that Leon Jacob, he wanted to get rid of his girlfriend because when he broke up with her, he was charged with assault and aggravated stalking. He wouldn't leave her alone. Lots of text messages allegedly following her around and things. And she filed a complaint, which could lead to a felony charge, which could lead, in Dr. Jacob's mind, to him losing his medical license. So he wanted this witness, his ex-girlfriend, to be rubbed out, allegedly. That's what Houston police believe happened, and that's what Taz Azay said he definitely wanted to have happen. Initially, the girlfriend was to be kidnapped, taken to a hotel, and that Dr. Jacob was to come over and inject some potassium chloride into her heart that would stop her heart and kill her.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's certainly probably not actually the most bizarre thing about this case. What strikes you the most?
What blows me away in this case, two highly educated people. Valerie McDaniel, this veterinarian, was a multimillionaire. Dr. Leon Jacob was just beginning his career as a surgeon. Everything ahead of them. The notion that these two people, over a period of time, decide, allegedly, to hire a hitman to kill their exes is something I've never heard of before. And the Houston police that we talked to in this say in their long careers, one fellow more than 30 years, he'd never heard of such a thing.
Interesting story. 48 Hours airs Saturday evenings. You can also stream it on CBS All Access. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, chain letters, love letters, whatever, to Weekend Roundup at cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Alyssa Rashaw is our intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.